find out what's going on in the world, the state,
and in your own backyard.
This is a Civic Media Network News Update.
It's 8 o'clock. Good morning, I'm Terry Bell, and here's what Wisconsin needs to know. A sailor from Wisconsin is accused of selling U.S. military secrets to China. Jinzhou Hui of Delavan was born in China. Prosecutors say Hui's mother encouraged him to do it. The Republican presidential debate in Milwaukee is less than 2 weeks away. Chris Christie is far behind in the national polls. He tells reporters in New Hampshire that voters may be souring on Ron DeSantis.
When you're doing it as long as we have to do it to try to get the nomination and then ultimately win the presidency, people get to see you in a lot of different circumstances, a lot of different situations. And it's not a sheltered existence like some folks have before they run for president.
Frontrunner Donald Trump has not committed to attending. People who give $10 or less to a political campaign might not stay anonymous much longer. The Wisconsin Ethics Commission is considering new rules. Ethics Commission Administrator Dan Carlson says some typical fundraising practices are ripe for abuse.
There's been a practice out there of committees leaving a bucket unattended or unsupervised and insufficient safeguards to make sure that, you know, reasonable efforts are being made to either identify the contributor, which is also required, unless it's under $10, or just making sure that there actually is less than $10 or less being given.
People in Wisconsin who give $10 or less don't have to provide any information, but the commission is considering a change. A lot of people in Wisconsin love fireworks in the summertime, but more people these days are complaining. As Stuart J. Waddles reports, some communities are increasing fireworks fines.
People in Wisconsin set about $22 million on fire last year. The state ranks 12th in the country for fireworks spending. That's with the practice not technically legal everywhere. Local communities are fighting back, with firework fines recently increased in Kenosha. An alder there is calling for the state to take action against purveyors of pyrotechnics.
You can buy fireworks there. They give you a permit, but it's not good once you leave the parking lot. What is that? That to me is nothing, and I wish our legislatures in Madison would take up this issue.
Kenosha Alder Holly Kangas was part of a unanimous city council vote to raise fireworks fines by 30%. Stuart J. Waddles, Civic Media News.
A teenage murder defendant in Chippewa Falls will find out in January whether he'll be tried as a child or as an adult. A reverse waiver hearing that started Monday finished yesterday. The boy is accused of killing 10-year-old Lily Peters last year. He's now 15 years old. The prosecution and defense will make written statements to the judge that are due in November. That's what Wisconsin needs to know. I'm Terry Bell.
For WCFW and the Tap FM, I'm Jimmy Kuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley. Hearings this week are over in the Lily Peters homicide case in Chippewa County, and now a judge will decide next year whether the lone suspect, a 15-year-old boy, will be tried as an adult or if the case will go to juvenile court. The teenager is charged with murdering 10-year-old Lily Peters last year and leaving her body in the woods near her Chippewa Falls home. Testimony in reverse waiver hearings this week focused on the boy's mental health and treatment options available in state prison. If the boy is convicted of homicide as an adult, he would serve a mandatory life sentence in prison. If the case moves to juvenile court, he would be under supervision for the next 10 years. Judge Stephen Gibbs will decide in January where the case will go. Two homicide suspects in Eau Claire County are being tried separately. Brandon Gaston and Tracy Clark are both accused of killing an Altoona man and hiding his corpse. The body of 79-year-old Dennis Shoddy was found decapitated in the Rock River in Rockford, Illinois last April. Gaston will appear in court later this month. Clark's next court appearance is in October. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Kuska.
The Packers and the Bengals brawl. Good morning, I'm Mike Clemens with sports from Cincinnati. The Packers and Bengals had their joint practice session over 2 hours in hot, humid conditions here in the Ohio River Valley. Things got heated when there was pushing and shoving after a screen play that turned into a fight. Bengals defensive lineman DJ Reader was punching Packers left guard Elton Jenkins.
You got a lot of guys on our team who are going to fight. You know, you think you know that, and then when you go through a practice like this, you kind of see it, so it's fun.
Jenkins then ejected from practice after getting into another fight. I asked David Bakhtiari what triggered it.
I think he gave him like the wrong pie recipe or something like that, and he's pissed off. So,
I mean, your guy, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it just takes away a little bit from practice, but Elton, I mean, totally was in the right first time.
Quarterback Jordan Love missed on some deep passes, but connected on a few others as he made adjustments with the offense.
It's play dependent, but the timing routes are very important. You know, when looks change, you know, you might be seeing one high and then they go to two shell.
pre-snap, just being able to recognize that.
Matt LaFleur on why he decided to bring the team a day early on this road trip here to Cincinnati.
We had a great team dinner last night. You know, went out to Jeff Ruby's. Unbelievable steakhouse. It was a really good experience, I think, for our guys to be on the road. This is the first time that we've done anything together like that. So it was a pretty cool deal.
Elsewhere in the NFL, former Packers defensive back Breshad Breeland, arrested in North Carolina. He was with the Packers in 2018, earned a Super Bowl ring with the Chiefs the following year, but now out of football. Breeland arrested Tuesday night in a stolen Mercedes with illegal guns like AR-15s, 5 pounds of pot, and other drugs. Baseball. The Brewers now with a 2.5-game lead over the Cubs and the Reds in the NL Central, thanks to a 7-6 win over the Rockies.
You know, the game has twists and turns and ups and downs and good fortune and bad fortune. And, you know, you try to make every play you can control good. And that gives you your best chance to win.
That's Craig Counsell. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Wisconsin. Yeah, welcome into the Stu Daniels Show on a Thursday morning. It's the 10th day of August. And outside today, got some rain coming in several areas, at least a slight chance of rain. And La Crosse today, partly sunny with a slight chance of rain between 1 and 5 p.m. Highs around 81 degrees. And in Eau Claire today, mostly sunny. A slight chance of rain after 4 p.m., high around 79 degrees. In Richland Center, mostly sunny with a slight chance of rain after 4 p.m., high around 83. Amory says increasing cloudiness, slight chance of rain, highs around 77. And in Hayward, today's sunshine, highs around 76. So did you get to see any of that Brewers game yesterday? Oh, man. When they went into extra innings again for the second day in a row, but this time the Brewers came out on top. 7-6, the final score. And the Cubs and the Reds both lost yesterday, so the Brewers are now 2.5 games ahead of Chicago and Cincinnati. The Brewers are off today, then go down to Chicago for a weekend series with the White Sox. So headlines today. There is so much in the news, you don't even know where to start. All kinds of headlines from Wisconsin, as well as national headlines. We're going to try to cover as much of that as we can today to give you some of these headlines. Broadband internet access coming to rural Wisconsin as the state is receiving more than $1 billion as part of the Broadband Equity Access Deployment Act. Also, reed canary grass. Have you ever heard of that stuff? Reed canary grass. It's an aggressive plant species, and it is invading the forests and wetlands along the upper Mississippi River and actually changing the landscape. The death toll in Hawaii, now up to 36 as wildfires rip through areas of Maui. And Joe Biden signed an executive order banning new American investment in some Chinese technology, such as semiconductors and artificial intelligence. Man, we got 9 minutes after 8 o'clock. Let's start with the story about the broadband internet access coming to rural areas of Wisconsin. And the story here from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has a headline that says billions in subsidies are being poured into rural internet expansions. Billions in grants and subsidies fueling rural internet expansions could be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to finally bridge the digital divide. And the story
starts out by saying billions of dollars in recently announced federal grants have been called a once in a lifetime, or excuse me, it says once in a generation opportunity for internet service in rural America. But the same prediction was made about other plans, and some of those fell far short of their goals. The new funding is aimed at getting high-speed internet, also known as broadband, to even some of the most sparsely populated areas of the country by 2030. In late June, President Joe Biden unveiled more than $42 billion in grants under the program called the Broadband Equity Access Deployment Act. And here's a quote from Joe Biden. He said on June 25th, "It's the biggest investment in high-speed internet ever, because for today's economy to work for everyone, internet access is just as important as electricity or water or other basic services." Wisconsin has been allocated more than $1 billion under the program. That's in addition to more than $1 billion in subsidies already spent or allocated for internet expansion in the state. Wisconsin has roughly 246,000 locations lacking access to even minimum broadband speeds of 25 megabit per second downloads and 3 megabit per second uploads, and another 217,000 without access to 100 megabit per second downloads and 20 megabit per second uploads. Adequate speeds for many households, according to the State Public Service Commission. The locations are spread across the entire state, said PSC Chairwoman Rebecca Cameron Valk. Areas with little or no available service are the priority under these grants, yet some of the money could be used to upgrade networks built earlier under the $20 billion Connect America Fund. In February of 2012, FCC officials called that program a once-in-a-generation opportunity to, quote, finish the job of connecting rural America to broadband while bringing accountability and fiscal responsibility to programs that for too long lacked both, end quote. Unfortunately, the Connect America Fund fell far short of those lofty goals. In 2015, it only required grant recipients to deliver service of 10 megabit per second downloads and 1 megabit per second uploads, not even half the FCC's definition of broadband at the time, and not nearly enough bandwidth for today's households. Quote, it was a totally wasted investment, said Christopher Mitchell, director of the Community Broadband Networks Initiative at the Institute for Local Self-Reliance in Minneapolis. Quote, no one bothered to investigate whether the program's requirements were even met, Mitchell said. In one rural Wisconsin county after another, Connect America Fund left a trail of skepticism and frustration. Many communities initiated their own broadband expansion projects, seeking state grants and local partnerships because they hadn't seen much help from the federal government and big-name service providers. Broadband must be able to simultaneously support a family's need for connecting to the office, participating in virtual classrooms, live chats with a doctor or friend group. The internet has become the linchpin for rural businesses as well. Farmers need it to buy equipment and follow crop prices. Factories need it to connect with suppliers and customers. Rural health centers, tourism businesses, shops on Main Street all need a robust, reliable connection. Clark County, with only 29 people per square mile, has struggled with broadband access for years. Quote, people are only going to move here if they can get connected, said Sheila Nyberg, executive director of the Clark County Economic Development and Tourism Bureau. Proponents of broadband grants say they're necessary for locations where internet service providers otherwise wouldn't go because it's too expensive and wouldn't be a good return on their investment. And that's where we should pause for a second just to remind ourselves that that's what the federal government has been doing for decades or centuries even, when for-profit companies won't go into rural areas, then it's up to the federal government to subsidize and make sure that people out in the boondocks are going to get things like electricity and high-speed internet access, right? Often, I'll get back to the story here, often the grants cover half or more of the cost of burying fiber optic cable in areas with just a few homes per mile. Older networks must be upgraded as consumers demand more from the internet through video conferencing, telemedicine, and other uses not prevalent even 10 years ago. I think it's a reasonable investment, Valk said. The best broadband, it's generally agreed, is an affordable connection that supports the needs of consumers and businesses for many years into the future. And another aside, you know, 10 years ago, we couldn't even imagine what we would be doing on the internet now. So 10 years from now, who could even imagine what we will be doing on the internet then? Getting back to this story, it's not unreasonable to achieve broadband internet access because fiber optic cable, the industry's gold standard, has near limitless capabilities. Once buried in the ground, it can be upgraded through electronics rather than actually digging up the cable again. Fiber optic cable is the priority under these new grants. It's incredibly resilient, said Andrew Peterson, a senior vice president at TDS Telecommunications, a Madison-based internet service provider. TDS has been one of the larger grant recipients in Wisconsin and some other states. Quote, no one's been a bigger evangelist for getting broadband to the hardest to serve areas in the country than us. We've brought service to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, islands off the coast of Maine, and many places in rural Michigan and Wisconsin, Peterson said. So let's take a break there. 17 minutes after 8 o'clock, going to be back quick. So stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
Try to see it my way. Do I have to keep on talking till I can go on? While you see it your way, run the risk of knowing that our love may soon be gone. We can work it out. We can work it out. Think of what you're saying. You can get it wrong and still think of what I'm saying. We can work it out and get it straight or say goodnight. We can work it out. We can work it out. Life is very short and there's no time for fussing and fighting, my friend. I have always thought that it's a crime. Try to see it my way. Only time will tell if I am right or I am wrong. While you see it your way, there's a chance that we might fall apart before too long. We can work it out. We can work it out. Life is very short and there's no time for fussing.
Civic Media isn't just another broadcast company.
We're your neighbors. We bleed green and gold.
And we love nothing more than to help fellow Wisconsinites succeed.
Whether your business wants to advertise to your local community or the entire state, Civic Media can help. Find out more at civicmedia.us.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed Group.
The Joint Finance Committee, again in the middle of the night, took that out and said, well, hey, you have all this money coming from the federal government. Why don't you use that to create this program? Well, guess what? We proved it worked. Wages went up $2 an hour. There actually are a couple extra childcare businesses open now than there were about a year ago. And that's going to stop. Just Monday, we lost two.
Weekday morning, 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
A guy named Bill out in Oconomowoc. Bill's got some thoughts on that.
Thanks for talking about what you're talking about right now. Your station, you raised the bar high for integrity. You are a community radio station, which means you look out for all the citizens in the state of Wisconsin.
Daily conversations about Wisconsin's latest headlines and stories. Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
It's What's on Tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5 The Tap.
I'm meteorologist Megan Hatton. Areas of fog around this morning, then increasing clouds for your afternoon, the high near 80. Tonight and lasting through Friday, scattered showers and thunderstorms developing. A few storms may become strong to severe. The overnight low near 60, we're in the low 80s for highs on Friday. Right now at 62.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Stu Daniels Show, 23 minutes after 8 o'clock on this Thursday morning. We've got 70 degrees in La Crosse, 64 degrees in Richland Center, and we've lost another one. We've lost another one of our heroes, Robbie Robertson, master storyteller who led the band, dead at 80. That is the headline in Rolling Stone. Robbie Robertson from the band passed away yesterday. The subheadline here says the band's guitarist and primary songwriter collaborated with Bob Dylan and penned The Weight, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down, and Up on Cripple Creek, among other classics. Those songs and the one that we're listening to, covered by many different artists over the years. I'll give you a little bit of this story from Rolling Stone. Robbie Robertson, the band's guitarist and primary songwriter who penned The Weight, The Night They Drove Old Dixie Down, Up on Cripple Creek, and many other beloved classics, died on Wednesday at the age of 80 years old. Robertson's management company confirmed the musician's death. Quote, Robbie was surrounded by his family at the time of his death, including his wife, Janet, his ex-wife, Dominique, her partner, Nicholas, and his children, Alexandra, Sebastian, Delphine, and Delphine's partner, Kenny. His longtime manager, Jared Levine, said in a statement, in lieu of flowers, The family has asked that donations be made to the Six Nations of the Grand River to support the building of their new cultural center. The band only lasted 8 years after the release of their 1968 debut album, Music from Big Pink. But during that time, they forever changed the pop culture landscape by releasing brilliant Americana music at the peak of the psychedelic movement. Their first album sent shockwaves through the industry, inspiring Eric Clapton to break up Cream, the Beatles to attempt their own stripped back project with Let It Be, and a pair of young British songwriters named Elton John and Bernie Taupin to begin writing and recording their own material. Robertson took on the role as the group's leader, writing the majority of their songs and pushing them forward when substance abuse issues and infighting threatened their existence. It was also his decision to pull the plug on the group in 1976 when he couldn't take it anymore, setting the stage for their legendary farewell concert, The Last Waltz. And if you've never seen that movie, I would highly encourage you to do so if you are a fan of music. Many of the greatest musicians of that era are in that movie and were at that performance. The Last Waltz, the final concert by the original members of the band. And we should mention, I guess, that even though the band broke up then, they did get together, back together, some years later, probably around 1990, but without Robbie Robertson, and performed for several years. But I'll give you a little bit more of this story before we have to go to the break. And this is, let's see, I have a quote here. It says, "The road has taken a lot of the great ones," he said at the time. This is actually Robbie Robertson talking back at the time when he decided to end the band and do The Last Waltz. He said, "The road has taken a lot of the great ones, Hank Williams, Buddy Holly, Otis Redding, Janis, Jimi Hendrix, Elvis." He says, "It's a GD impossible way of life," but he didn't abbreviate GD. Before the band began making their own music, Robertson was one of Bob Dylan's key collaborators, playing guitar on his album Blonde on Blonde, and convincing the songwriter to hire the other members of his group as his backing band. So, in case you're not familiar with the band, they were Bob Dylan's backing band when he first went electric in the mid-60s. They toured the world in 1965 and 66, facing a torrent of boos by enraged folk purists who were mad that Bob Dylan was going electric and trying to sound like the Beatles or something. But anyway, we do have to take a break here. It's 8:28 right now. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News special report. At least 36 people have now died on the Hawaiian island of Maui, where voracious wildfires have devastated the historic town of Lahaina. Lieutenant Governor Sylvia Luke surveyed the damage from overhead.
Just to fly over to see the burning flames and see firsthand the impact on Lahaina and Lahaina town was just so shocking and devastating.
Correspondent Jonathan Vigliotti has arrived on the island by boat.
A distant hurricane brought wind gusts of up to 70 miles per hour.
fueling several large wildfires so quickly, the Coast Guard says it rescued 14 people, including two young children, who were forced to jump in the ocean to escape the flames.
Tourists who remain are being urged to leave now. Bus evacuations for visitors in West Maui will resume in 6 hours. CBS News Special Report. I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For WCFW and the Tap FM, I'm Jimmy Cuska. Here's what you need to know in the Chippewa Valley. Hearings this week are over in the Lily Peters homicide case in Chippewa County, and now a judge will decide next year whether the lone suspect, a 15-year-old boy, will be tried as an adult or if the case will go to juvenile court. The teenager is charged with murdering 10-year-old Lily Peters last year and leaving her body in the woods near her Chippewa Falls home. Testimony in reverse waiver hearings this week focused on the boy's mental health and treatment options available in state prison. If the boy is convicted of homicide as an adult, he would serve a mandatory life sentence in prison. If the case moves to juvenile court, he would be under supervision for the next 10 years. Judge Stephen Gibbs will decide in January where the case will go. Two homicide suspects in Eau Claire County are being tried separately. Brandon Gaston and Tracy Clark are both accused of killing an Altoona man and hiding his corpse. The body of 79-year-old Dennis Shoddy was found decapitated in the Rock River in Rockford, Illinois last April. Gaston will appear in court later this month. Clark's next court appearance is in October. For Civic Media News, I'm Jimmy Cuska.
Did you know the Wisconsin State Fair is 172 years old? It still celebrates the industries important to our state's history, like agriculture. But every year, new attractions and items are added. This year, there's more than 100 new foods to try. So what do you think topped the culinary list last year? Flamin' Hot Cheetos Chicken on a Stick? Deep-fried Old Fashioned? Or Pino Pretzel Popper Brat? The answer's coming up. The Wisconsin State Fair didn't start in its current home of West Allis. The first was in Janesville along the Rock River, then moved to different locations the next 40 years. The original cream puff has been around almost as long. Close to 400,000 are gobbled up every year. So which food was number one last year? It was the Pino Pretzel Popper Brat. It came out on top. The State Fair is a true slice of Wisconsin, and it runs through August 13th. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
I have Corrine Hendrickson, part of the Wisconsin Early Childhood Action Needed group.
We spend $500 on our infants and toddlers on average. If you go to the other countries, you're talking about $11,000 on average in Europe and the other developed countries. It makes a difference. They end up spending less on their K-12 system. They end up spending less on their colleges. They end up spending less on jail.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow.
Weekday mornings 6 till 8
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
Ever did see one?
8:34. Another song from the band. Yeah, just before the break, we were talking about the fact that we lost Robbie Robertson yesterday, the main songwriter from that group that was Bob Dylan's backing band in the mid-60s, and then went on to produce several of their own albums, a lot of great albums, up until they decided to call it quits in 1976 with that great final performance that was filmed called The Last Waltz. And I was just thinking about some of the great highlights from that movie. I guess they were all highlights. A lot of great performances. Of course, I think the movie is about 2.5 hours long, and I believe the actual concert itself was at least twice that long when they did it. But I remember Van Morrison in that movie, also Dr. John, Joni Mitchell, Eric Clapton, the Staple Singers, and of course, Bob Dylan. And I have a quote here from Robbie Robertson talking about when Dylan went electric back in 1965 and the fact that the band went out with him playing electric music, which really upset a lot of the folk music purists at the time. Quote here from Robbie Robertson said about Bob Dylan, his friends, his advisors, and everyone told him to blow us off and start from scratch. And it took a tremendous amount of courage for him not to do that. That's Robbie Robertson speaking in 1987. He was born on July 5th in 1943 to a Native American mother and a Jewish father. Says he was fascinated by music from a young age. One more quote. He said, I've been playing guitar for so long, I can't remember when I started. He told Rolling Stone in 1968. I guess I got into rock and roll like everybody else. Robbie Robertson, yes. I only got to see him one time. It was back in 1974 on a multi-band bill. It was Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and Santana and the band and Jesse Cole and Young. That was at Cleveland Stadium, Cleveland Municipal Stadium back in 1974, just an incredible show. I did get to see the band many times when they reformed without Robbie Robertson, but it wasn't the same. It was still good. But anyway, lost another great artist yesterday, another great songwriter, Robbie Robertson. 8:37 and a half right now. We got 63 degrees in Eau Claire, and it's 61 degrees in Amory. Looking for highs today in the upper 70s and low 80s in most places. And when I was going over the headlines earlier, I talked about this grass, stuff called reed canary grass. Have you ever heard of that? Reed canary grass, an aggressive plant species invading the forests and the wetlands along the upper Mississippi River, changing the landscape. I have a story here from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It says, what to know about the aggressive grass taking over forests along the upper Mississippi River. As the temperature neared 90 degrees on a day in early June, Sarah Rother revved up a weed whacker and began to cut down the waist-high grass that blanketed the small island she stood on in the Mississippi River. Rother, a forester with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, was clearing away reed canary grass, an aggressive plant species that has invaded the forests and wetlands along the upper Mississippi River. This unnamed island, just south of La Crosse, used to be forest covered. Only a few trees remain, some of them dead, providing scant relief from the hot sun. Fellow forester Andy Meyer equates the arrival of reed canary grass to cancer. A patch of forest might look healthy today, but when tree diseases and excess water cause big trees to die, the grass is waiting in the wings when the canopy opens up. Sun-loving and fast-growing, it moves in quickly, eating up the resources that young trees would usually use to grow and eventually taking over. Forests along the Mississippi River are already being degraded, and in the northern parts of the floodplain, reed canary grass is one of the heaviest influences on their struggle, said Lyle Guillon, a terrestrial ecologist at the National Great Rivers Research and Education Center. Losing forest, which provides critical wildlife habitat, stabilizes the soil, and improves water quality, to a troublesome grass won't be good for the ecosystem. Land managers want to slow down its growth, but the grass is unlikely to get eradicated completely. So what now? Reed canary grass is a perennial grass that grows in dense mats that can reach up to 9 feet tall. It loves light and moist, fertile soil, growing most often in wetlands, ditches, and soggy fields. The grass has a thick root layer that prevents other plants from establishing in the ground. It's an invasive species, meaning it was introduced into the ecosystem and is now causing harm. Reed canary grass easily outcompetes other vegetation and is often the first plant to grow in an area that has experienced some sort of disturbance, according to the Wisconsin Wetlands Association. On the upper Mississippi River, for example, tree die-offs from disease and flooding have allowed the grass to get a stronger foothold. Quote, the species is sort of there, ready to capitalize on increased tree mortality, said Nathan DeJager, who researches the Upper Rivers floodplain forests for the U.S. Geological Survey. So, where did this grass come from? Before the locks and dams were installed to control the flows of the upper Mississippi, much of the land near the river was used for agriculture. Farmers planted reed canary grass for their livestock to forage. Some reed canary grass is native to North America. Other types were introduced from Asia and Europe. There are several things a forest can do for the river that a patch of reed canary grass can't. When flooding happens, the deep roots of big trees slow down water and capture sediment. But water flows right over the top of reed canary grass, Meyer said. Trees also stabilize the soil and prevent erosion. More erosion has occurred on islands that are dominated by reed canary grass, he said. Soils along the river also contain a lot of nitrogen. Reed canary grass may leach more of that nitrogen into the river because it can't hold on to it as long as trees do. An ecosystem covered with reed canary grass would allow more nitrogen to seep into the river than a forested one, DeJager said, and it's already a really high nitrogen river. That nitrogen, of course, ends up in the Gulf of Mexico, where it creates the dead zone, a massive hypoxic area that chokes off aquatic life. So how is this grass, or how widespread is it? The U.S. Geological Society has done some work mapping where the grass occurs on the river floodplain between Minneapolis and central Iowa using data from 2010, DeJager said. Along the river between Onalaska and Genoa, Wisconsin, for example, reed canary grass was found in 80% of the forest understory that was surveyed. Further north, between Hager City and Alma, Wisconsin, it was found in 70% of the surveyed understory. They also looked at how much the grass had taken over the meadows. It made up 70% of all the meadow area surveyed along the entire stretch of the upper river. Near La Crosse, it made up as much as 90%. Scientists know that in some places, reed canary grass has completely taken over an area that used to be forested. They don't know yet whether that change will be permanent, DeJager said. Further downriver, this species is less of a problem, but there are other invasive plants to contend with. Japanese hops, Johnson grass, and Chinese tallow are all causing problems in the river floodplain. So what can be done to stop it? One organization invested in clearing it up is Audubon's regional office that covers Minnesota, Iowa, and Missouri. The group views the ceding of floodplain forest to grass as a threat to the Mississippi Flyway, through which more than 325 bird species journey each year to and from their wintering grounds. Those birds use trees for shelter and for food. We have no delusions that we will eradicate reed canary grass from the river, said Dale Gentry, director of conservation for the region, but they're going to try to slow it down. They've tried a few strategies, building on work from other agencies also trying to curb it, like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the Army Corps of Engineers, planting thousands of young trees and revisiting those areas to manage the grass around them is less costly but more time-consuming. Planting three-year-old trees, which are already tall enough to beat out the grass for sunlight, has yielded a higher survival rate, but is more expensive. So I guess that makes sense, right? Planting a three-year-old tree, which has already established itself and is big enough to beat out the grass for the sunlight. There's also the tactic of killing off reed canary grass entirely by burning it, mowing it, or using herbicides. It won't be gone for long, though, but if the timing is right and nearby trees drop seed onto the bare ground left behind, it makes natural regeneration possible. At 8:46 right now, going to take a quick break. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
Hot. Wait. Now it's going to rain? It is summer in Wisconsin.
As much as we love it, we love to hate it too. Find a forecast you can count on along with the in-depth details you need, only from the Civic Media Weather Team.
These extended conditions have led us into a flash drought. Sitting in these above average temperatures with minimal rain has swiftly altered the local climate.
Your weather and more for your part of Wisconsin.
On your local Civic Media radio station and streaming on the Civic Media app.
More than 80 million Americans depend on AM radio each month for news, weather, and emergency information. A new bill in Congress would make sure AM radio remains in cars, because when cell and internet services are down, this free service could be your only lifeline. Text AM to 52886 and tell Congress to support the AM Radio for Every Vehicle Act.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Hey, I'm Smokey Bear, and I made an assistant to help you out, because only you can prevent wildfires.
Hey, Assistant Smokey Bear, call me Papa Bear, because I'm grilling up dinner. Do you get it?
Yes, good job.
So, what should I do with all these coals?
Don't just toss them out. Put them in a metal container, because those embers can start a wildfire.
I understand. The stakes are high.
Ha, 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 ha.
Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Megan Hatton. Areas of fog around this morning, then increasing clouds for your afternoon, the high near 80. Tonight and lasting through Friday, scattered showers and thunderstorms developing. A few storms may become strong to severe. The overnight low near 60, we're in the low 80s for highs on Friday. Currently, it's 64.
Looking for more local programming? Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Show 8:53 right now on this Thursday morning. Music from Robbie Robertson, passed away yesterday at the age of 80 years old. That's from his solo album that came out in 1987. And if you are a fan of the Bodines, you might be saying, hey, I recognize that voice of that guy doing the background vocals. Yeah, you're right. Sammy Yannis, one of the founders of the Bodines. And I have a piece here. This is from Wikipedia describing this song. It says, when one of the producers, Daniel Lanois, was asked about the inspiration for Somewhere Down the Crazy River, he said that the song was kind of like a guy with a deep voice telling you about steaming nights in Arkansas. He went on to say that Robertson was describing his experiences of hanging out in his old neighborhood in Arkansas with Levon Helm, drummer from the band, during hot nights in which they were fishing with dynamite and had asked a local for directions to Somewhere Down the Crazy River. And talking about the composition of the song, it says here it features a sweet and wonderful chord sequence on a Suzuki Omnichord, which had been introduced to Lanois by Brian Eno. And as Robertson developed the chord sequence, Lanois surreptitiously recorded him and superimposed his storytelling on top of it. Yeah, it's interesting how they put these songs together. Anyway, Robbie Robertson dead at the age of 80, but he left us a lot of great music. And the next thing I'm going to get to here is give you an update on what's going on in Hawaii. This is just unbelievable stuff. Have you seen the pictures? Have you seen the video of what's going on there with the smoke and the fires? Imagine, you know, just being in your town and fire all of a sudden comes raging down the street, just consuming everything in its path, whipped up by these super high winds. I have a headline here from USA Today that says the thickest black smoke, 36 dead, thousands flee as Hawaii wildfires rage on Maui. And it says here evacuations and damage assessment will continue Thursday on the battered island of Maui, where catastrophic blazes killed at least 36 people, damaged hundreds of structures, and left a historic and beloved town in one of the deadliest U.S. wildfires in recent years. Officials said more than 270 structures were damaged or destroyed, including entire blocks of homes, businesses, and a 200-year-old church in Lahaina Town in Maui, where blazes fueled by wind from passing Hurricane Dora were concentrated. On the Big Island, three wildfires were burning, though two of them were at least 60% contained. The Maui Fire Department will conduct a damage assessment at first light Thursday, county officials said, and I believe they are about 5 hours behind us. And if that's right, then it's just approaching 4 a.m. there. And a mass bus evacuation for visitors in West Maui will resume Thursday morning, taking visitors directly to the Kahului Airport. President Joe Biden said in a statement he has ordered all available federal assets to help combat the wildfires, including Black Hawk helicopters provided by the Marines. The Coast Guard rescued 12 people from the waters off Lahaina as residents fled into the ocean to escape the flames and the smoke. Acting Governor Sylvia Luke said late Wednesday the road to recovery will be long. Maui County Mayor Richard Bisson Jr. said the island had been tested like never before in our lifetime. With lives lost and properties decimated, we are grieving with each other during this inconsolable time, Bisson said. Evacuation efforts have been complicated by power blackouts, a lack of cell service, the loss of 911 service, and downed power lines in different parts of the island. More than 11,000 customers remained without power Thursday, according to poweroutage.us. Man, pray for those people on Maui. Got 8:58 right now. Going to take a break for the top of the hour news. Stick around. You're tuned in to the Stu Daniels Show.
Doesn't hurt, feels good to help. And when you give blood, you provide a life-saving difference for others. The knee doesn't take a summer break, so we have a challenge for you, started by Civic Media's Earl Ingram.
Congratulations to all those people and all of you who donate blood.
Take a selfie while giving blood, then post it along with hashtag CivicPints. Give blood and you could get a prize, too. Find challenge details and a donation center near you at civicmedia.us/giveblood. civicmedia.us/giveblood.
Larry, it's your mom. Did you know the Civic Media Network covers the whole state of Wisconsin? They can help your business get the word out, whether you want to reach a smidge of folks or just want the whole kit and caboodle. Call 608-819-8255. Okay then, bye.
If you care about animals or crops, you probably care how the weather could impact both.
It's summer in Wisconsin, and the success of your efforts often depends on knowing the forecast. Count on your local Civic Media weather team for all the information you need.
Crops' roots are also growing deeper in search for water, which is bad news, because when rain finally falls, it will...